This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organising icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.
Der Winterurlaub wird perfekt, wenn Sie Ihren Zwischenstopp an der Autobahn zum besonderen Erlebnis machen. Shopping bei über 110 Marken. Jetzt im Sale mit bis zu 70% auf den Originalpreis. In Wertheim Village an der A3 und Ingolstadt Village an der A9.
Suddenly out of nowhere lots of people came. And they're all very, very angry, emotions are high. This is only moments before we found ourselves trapped in a horrifying nightmare. Things have really escalated. They started beating up my local producer outside. They all attacked him and then they started attacking the car and now they're not letting us leave.
This is the last recording we managed to get before we were attacked by a hostile mob of hundreds. But how did we end up here? More on that later in the programme. This is the documentary on the BBC World Service. I'm Sahar Zand, and this week I'm in Bangladesh for the second of a two-part Heart and Soul special. We're investigating violent attacks on the Hindu minority following the collapse of Sheikh Hasina's government in August 2024. In this episode, I continue to follow Hindu university students Bonomali and Shukanto, who are on a mission to document alleged atrocities against their community, often in remote rural areas.
It's early morning and I've woken up to a message from Bonomali and Shukanto saying that overnight they got intel that there has been another attack in a village nearby.
So what else do you know about what's happened?
We have heard there is a family, their straw house was burnt by some anonymous person, we don't know.
Is anyone hurt?
No one hurt, but the house is burning.
Bonomali and Shukanto show me a chilling video they've just received. Huge flames engulfing a building, while panicked men desperately throw water at it. Women and children are running, farm animals are scattered in terror. It's gut-wrenching to watch. They explain that social media, especially Facebook, often alerts them to these attacks, which they then verify through local sources before documenting them in person. Smartphones, even in remote villages, have become vital tools in exposing these horrors.
If we don't go there, then they are not get no support there. Because at first we go there, then we take the information, then we send to the information to the police, then police will respond.
And also the administrative body, and how they can also help them. And also we try to give the information to the media also.
Hindu groups say thousands of attacks have occurred since August, when the previous secular government was ousted. But the Nobel laureate, Mohammed Yunus, now heading the interim government, disputes these numbers, calling them exaggerated. Bonomali says that the number of these attacks have decreased, but still happen almost daily. In northern Bangladesh alone, they receive reports of 8 to 9 incidents each week. These include rape, extortion, the destruction of homes and temples, and even murders.
We are here. Let's go out.
Oh, the smell.
Yes. Yeah, you can still smell the fire, yeah.
A charred barn stands in ruins, its tin roof collapsed onto scorched straw and crops. Nearby Hindu homes, now streaked with soot, narrowly escaped the blaze. No one was injured, but for the barn's owner, a paddy farmer, the loss is catastrophic, wiping out over a year's income. The residents, though physically unharmed, are visibly shaken.
This is very horrifying. The trees are completely burned here.
And the straw house is also completely burnt. Only some of the pillars, concrete pillars, standing.
So you can imagine, you can understand what is the intensity of fire here.
When you see the other houses that are burnt, like,
a few weeks ago, it's still horrifying. But then standing here, still seeing a bit of the smoke, smelling the fire, it just makes it feel a lot more, it just hits a lot harder.
Yes. You see here, behind this house, there is another house.
Yeah.
And also lots of houses around this. If the people are not trying to stop this fire, it may be happened that the whole business is totally burned.
The owner, blackened from fighting the fire, is still in shock and too afraid to speak on the record. But Omalia and Shokanto explain that fear of retaliation keeps many victims silent, unwilling to report their ordeal to the media or authorities. Another layer of the problem. To protect the community, we're withholding the name of this village.
They somehow think that, because lots of people are illiterate, they somehow think that if they expose something, then they might get attacked again.
The terrorists are trying to spreading fear.
It must be frustrating for you to see that when people are being attacked like this, they're still fearing, refusing to speak out.
Yeah. It's so much horrible, and we just so much frustrated about it that they can't speak. Right now, the voice up there is so down. And also, they can't expose them, can't tell the police or anywhere. They just stand behind watching everything.
Surprisingly, the villagers are more open with Bonomali and Shokanto, who've earned their trust as student leaders, credited with toppling the previous government.
The recent scenario of Bangladesh, the students really in power. They can only hope for the students because the political culture, they can't rely on the oldest people right now.
Shokanto often uses moments like this to deliver impassioned speeches to rally the community.
What did you just talk to them about?
We talked about when you were under attack, please raise your voice. And we are trying to encourage our people that do not get fear with the students with you. And we always try to stand with you.
Why is it important to tell them these things?
They're all in fear. So if we don't, they might get up from the country.
Because we are under attack.
Most of the people are thinking about leaving the country. And they've already backed their important things.
They are prepared, ready to leave this country.
This is the plan of every Hindu in Bangladesh. We are feeling like there's nothing left in this country for us.
That's why lots of people go to the border and try to leave this country.
Shokanto recalls the chaos after the August Revolution, when attacks on minorities surged.
One side of the river was India and other side of the river was Bangladesh. And Hindus are trying to cross this river.
Scores of Hindus fled towards the Indian border, but tightened patrols on both sides stopped many in their tracks, forcing them to return home. Escaping the country is far from easy and riddled with dangers. This harsh reality fuels Bonomali and Shokanto's activism, and they're taking me to meet someone who embodies these risks.
We're the members of the family.
Hello, hi, how are you?
We arrive in a small mud house in a farming village to meet the family of Joyonto, a 14-year-old boy who left home days before my visit in September and never returned. He was killed by border guards while attempting to flee. His grief-stricken mother, barely able to stand, sobs uncontrollably, supported by relatives.
My son, he's just a little boy. He's still so young. It was when he found out what's happening to Hindus here that he changed. And then one day, he just left, without saying anything to us. We had no idea he wanted to run away.
What was it, do you think, about the situation in Bangladesh that made him want to escape?
His head was constantly in his phone, and he was on Facebook. That's where he found out about the attacks against Hindus, and that really scared him. I think that's why he left. And you know, he's not the only one. We're all scared. And we've heard of lots of other Hindus also trying to run away.
Tell me about the last time you saw him.
The last time I saw my boy, it was on the day he left, in the afternoon. He ate his lunch right here, and he was on his phone. When he said goodbye, I thought he was going to come back in a couple of hours, but he never came back. A few days later, I heard that my son is no more. that he got shot at the border. I didn't know what to say or what to do. I just got sick.
Do you want to stop?
Yeah, we can stop. Thank you so much for your time.
Bonomali and Shokanta say that stories like Joyonto's are heartbreakingly common.
We are also feeling sorrow by seeing this, but we need to stay here, because if you leave this country, that will be more dangerous for you.
If I stay here, if I fight for my people and fight for me, then I think I can make an environment to live here.
Yeah, I agree with Shukanto completely.
You're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organizing icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee, and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.
Der Winterurlaub wird perfekt, wenn Sie Ihren Zwischenstopp an der Autobahn zum besonderen Erlebnis machen. Shopping bei über 110 Marken. Jetzt im Sale mit bis zu 70% auf den Originalpreis. In Wertheim Village an der A3 und Ingolstadt Village an der A9.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
I'm Sahar Zand, reporting for Heart and Soul from Bangladesh, where I'm investigating attacks on the country's Hindu minority. In recent years, Bangladesh has seen a rise in Islamist extremism. While many condemn the attacks against minorities, some Islamist leaders stand accused of inciting violence on Hindus, deepening communal tensions.
We always say that Islam is the only true religion and other religions are here to corrupt people.
Mahmudul Hassan Gonobi, an Islamic scholar and preacher, commands a significant following with over 150,000 followers on Facebook and sermons attended by hundreds. He's a member of the controversial Hifazat al-Islam coalition, which includes groups previously banned for terrorism. Gonobi, who openly seeks to establish Taliban-style rule in Bangladesh, was charged and imprisoned for inciting violence during the previous regime. Released on bail just before Hasina's government fell, his fiery rhetorics have reportedly fueled anti-Hindu sentiments, sparking widespread concern over his growing influence.
What we want is Islamic Sharia laws to be observed. We want Islamic Khilafat, and everybody, not just Muslims, everybody will gain their freedom. Discrimination will be a thing of the past.
During the previous regime, you were charged and imprisoned for inciting violence against Hindus. Can you elaborate on what happened?
So it's a complete lie. What happened during the Hasina regime, that regime's claim to power was by tagging anybody and everybody who is going against their regime as terrorists. I have never incited any violence against Hindus in general, and I do not have anything against common Hindus either. But what I do protest and I do dislike and do not want in Bangladesh is extremist Hinduism, Hindutva. In India, there is RSS. In Bangladesh, there is ISKCON. They have been trying to work towards that agenda to make Bangladesh part of the greater India. They say that Muslims are not from this land and this will be a Hindu land. So that's what I fight against.
You're not always clear in your comments, especially when it comes to differentiating between regular Hindus and Hindu extremists, which has led to some accusing you of spreading rhetorics that are anti-Hindu in general.
If you listen carefully to all my sermons, you would see that I actually draw a distinction between Hindu extremism and regular Hindus.
You say if I listen very carefully, but why don't you make this distinction more clear? Because
some may argue that not doing so could mean that you're actually inciting violence against regular Hindus.
I am not denying it, what you said, that it somebody can misread it and say that it's against the Hindus, but it's clearly not. And I definitely can be even more clearer. But the followers that I have, they follow me out and out thoroughly. So they know what I mean. I don't think my followers are idiots. And I don't believe that anybody would be instigated to racial violence following my sermons.
Many people I've spoken to, including Hindu activists and those impacted by these attacks, they say that the sort of things you say and rhetorics from people like you have actually played a major role in inciting the violence that they're now subjected to, because perhaps not everybody fully understands where you're coming from or is able to read between the lines.
People with mental health issues can get influenced and interpret things differently, but in general, that is not the case. Whenever I preach, whenever I give my sermons, I always say that no Muslim is allowed to illegally or unlawfully harm any non-Muslim, be it Hindu or anybody.
That's contradictory to what I've seen and heard from you. For example, on August 11th, in response to Bangladeshi citizens guarding Hindu temples against these attacks, you posted on Facebook, and I'm quoting here, "No matter how diligently you guard temples and churches, they will never be satisfied with you. Tomorrow, they will undoubtedly conspire against you." That's what you said.
If you look at the news from that time, you'd see that India, the Prime Minister and their ministers, they were saying that maybe it's time for us to attack Bangladesh and Muslims, extremists, they are taking over Bangladesh, things like that. So what I said was in protest in that particular context. And it's also true that idol worship is the worst of crimes in the Islam. So if Muslim person goes and protect the temples, it can be part of a conspiracy that these Muslim people were here and they did it. And if a Muslim goes and protect places of worship when there is no need, when there is a government to take care of that, that actually goes against Islamic Aqidah.
On September the 5th, you expressed satisfaction after news reports came out that a Hindu teenager was killed in a mob attack after he allegedly insulted Prophet Muhammad on his social media. How do you justify that?
It's not because a Hindu youth was killed, I said, Alhamdulillah. It has nothing to do with that. I am just expressing my delight and my gratitude to Allah that Islam is being upheld. A mob actually delivered justice by killing a person who insulted our prophet.
But this attack was based on allegations. So what do you actually know about how he may have insulted Prophet Muhammad? Because that detail is very important, isn't it?
I do not know the details, but if that news item was true, then I said, Alhamdulillah, that's all I have to say about it.
But again, you didn't clarify that if. Isn't it irresponsible to say something like that, considering you have so many followers, considering the level of influence you have, to say something so inflammatory, given that you didn't even know the facts? Some may argue that is directly inciting violence.
It's not my job to fact check every news. I was only responding to a news headline that came to my notice. If the news is false, doesn't matter. People would just know that this is the law of Islam. If somebody insults the Prophet, he is killable.
But Omali and Shakanto believe this kind of inflammatory rhetoric has directly contributed to the rise in anti-Hindu violence.
When they're doing these things, we are getting hopeless. So don't do this, because this is spreading bad news for us and creating some risk threat for us. So don't make any kind of word which will create problem for the minorities or the Hindus.
Especially in Bangladesh, most of the people are not that much educated. That's why whenever they hear something like this, they just blindly believe that. Okay, This is the problem.
In several YouTube videos and Facebook videos, we have seen that the Islamic leaders are laughing about our worships. Sometimes they are telling that idol worship is not in their religious point of view, and this is not right, and no people can do idol worship. The person who are breaking down our idols, they are believing that idol worship is not a proper way for doing prayer. This statement will be create more risks for our life.
We're back on the road again.
We are almost there.
Heading to the Sotida Hindu Crematorium and Temple Complex in Pirganj, which used to serve 14 villages in the area.
There is a brick building with its roof collapsed and it's almost entirely destroyed. What was that?
This is Shiva temple.
The temple of Shiva.
They also break down the idol of this temple also.
The once sacred site now lies in ruins.
This is called Kali.
Kali temple.
There is a white hexagonal structure and the doors are completely burnt away. I'm looking inside and the idols have been taken away. There is nothing inside.
It's so horrible. We think every god needs to be respected. Every religious needs to be respected.
Yes, this is offensive.
Actually, they disrespect our god. That emotionally hurt us, also mentally.
Why do you think they're coming after your gods, your temples?
Because this is the only place that a Hindu feels safe. God is the safest place. And if you're destroying this place, people will think that if God is not protecting us, so how can we protect ourselves? And we are helpless right now.
There is about 40 people around me and they all want to say something. This is a very distressed and emotional community at the moment.
Abhi kanke president na he is Shankar Rai and he is the president of this crematorium.
My name is Chandra Rai. I've been the chairperson of this crematorium since 2007.
For a long time then.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about this attack. What happened?
On the 6th of August, a big mob came in. There were over 100 of them, and the people, they broke all the buildings here. They were saying that this area is under control of the Hindus now, but they want to give it to landless farmers. They were really organized, and we weren't expecting them, so we couldn't do anything. We were really afraid, and we didn't have the power to stop them. People could have died here. So we are really feeling insecure about the community members, and they don't have hope, and they worry about their future here.
What can you tell me about these people? Like, who are they? Why would they want to attack you?
Only Muslims came here. They want us to go away so they can take over our land. It's because we're born Hindus. That's why we're facing this ordeal right now.
Yeah, 100%.
Islam has various different sects, and the imams in Bangladesh, even though most of them can recite the Quran off by heart, they don't really understand it, the meaning of it. The Quran and Muhammad never said that you go and kill people of different religions. That's what we believe. We want to live in harmony, and to the Muslim leaders who are instigating violence against minority Hindus, I want to tell them, let's not do this anymore. Let's sit down, let's talk, let's find a way to live in harmony together, just like we used to before.
During the making of this documentary, I visited 9 villages and spoke to dozens of Hindu families scarred by these attacks. But finding the people behind the violence, or even those who support it openly, has been much harder. Now, Banomali and Shokanto are taking me to a place where I might finally get to meet some of them face to face.
There is also another crematorium where a mosque was made by the terrorist.
They made a mosque in a Hindu crematorium.
Yes. And they threat the president and secretary not to go this crematorium. They will kill the president and the secretary.
We arrive in Gorgan village, nestled in Thakurgaon district. Just weeks before, a Hindu crematorium called Gorgan Central stood right here.
This crematorium was used by the Hindus to burn dead body, but the Muslims of this area made a mosque in that place.
In place of the Hindu crematorium now stands a small mosque. Its newly built tin roof and brick walls, a stark replacement. Outside, a handful of men linger in conversation. One of them, unmistakably dressed as an imam.
I am worrying about our security. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't want to just risk anyone's life. Yeah.
To avoid inflaming tensions, we park our car a short distance away, taking care to conceal my recording equipment.
Banomali, Shukanta and I wait in the car while our local producer Saqib cautiously approaches the mosque to gauge if the men are willing to talk. So I'm inside of the car and my local producer has stepped outside to speak to the community. Suddenly out of nowhere lots of people came and they're all very, very angry, emotions are high. So my local producer is currently talking to them. There's a lot of shouting. I'm staying inside of the car for now for our own safety. Within minutes, things escalate. From inside the car, we watch in disbelief as the small group swells into a mob of hundreds. The mood turns menacing. Suddenly, Saqib is being punched and kicked as he scrambles back towards the car. We try to escape, but it's too late. Bricks are jammed under our tires and our car keys are snatched away, along with our phones. We're stranded. Trapped, we sit frozen inside the car, watching in horror. A few individuals attempt to calm the furious mob, but others press forward, pelting the car with bricks and stones, their shouts dripping with venom. Some spit against the windows. My heart pounds, and then a chilling silence falls over the crowd. We see a group of men carrying a barrel. One word cuts through the murmurs. Gasoline.
After about 3 hours of being in the car, they were shaking our car, they were screaming until the police arrived and they let us go.
Thankfully, we had sent our coordinates to the security forces before the mob confiscated our phones. And armed guards did eventually come to our rescue 3 or so hours later. Still, this was a much quicker response compared to what some of the Hindu residents here told me they received when they were attacked. As far as we know, no arrests were made. Months later, the mosque still stands.
I thought about that. I maybe die today. Why we are not safe here? I think you understand the actual situation of us.
Don't care.
We go there to discuss, but they are doing mob justice. They threaten us, they will kill in front of you. In Bengali, they use the term that they will kill everyone. They will burn the whole car.
I'm so scared.
How we safe in this country?
Some people wanted to save us. That was the very important thing, because without that, we could be killed.
Yeah. At some point when the people were banging on the screens and they started moving the car, yeah, that was scary, and some people started pushing them back.
That's why we're alive right now, because of those people who are good. There's good, bad, both sides of the people.
Now that we went through what we did, are you guys going to continue doing what you're doing?
Yeah, we are continuing.
Yes. We need to secure our life. If we stop this, they will be more threat for our future generation. If we silent here, we need to leave this country.
I think we need to solve this kind of problem. And this kind of problem can solve by staying in this country.
You've been listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service. This Heart and Soul program was presented and produced by me, Sahar Zand, with local producer Saqib Pratai and executive producer Rajiv Gupta.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organizing icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee, and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.